As he lies in the dark, the rage builds. He's tired of the nagging, the constant arguments. Who are they to judge him? As he peers into the dark, the blade of the axe reflects a sliver of moonlight peeking through the curtain. It winks at him. Here is your solution. This is True Crime South Africa. I'm Nicole Engelbrecht, and you're listening to episode 160, The Langefeldt Family Murders. This episode is sponsored by Lyft. I'm going to be traveling quite a bit this year for book launches and live pod events. And even before Lyft became a sponsor of TCSA, they were always my first airline choice. And it's not just because they have complimentary onboard snacks and free Vita coffee on every flight, although that is a huge plus. It's also their easy penalty-free fee changes and cancellations, because sometimes an extra interview opportunity or event comes up at the last minute and I have to change my flights. Lyft also offers flight discounts for kids under 12, which sadly I stopped qualifying for 32 years ago, but are super useful for parents, I'm sure. And there's a premium offering ideal for business travelers and frequent flyers alike. And as a huge animal lover, I can't help but be swayed by their policy that your small dog can travel on board too. Lyft is helping to take True Crime South Africa to new heights. So visit lyft.co.za to view or book daily Lyft flights between Cape Town, Durban and Joburg. T's and C's apply. And a huge thank you to Lyft for your support of True Crime South Africa. Since 2019, True Crime South Africa has been telling the stories of the victims of violent crime in South Africa. The podcast is independent. That means no big or even little corporates fund it. And that's just the way I like it. And it's the only independent podcast in South Africa that consistently charts in the top 10. Keeping a podcast like this going is time-consuming. And for the most part, it remains a one-woman process. It's me. I'm the one woman. You? Yes, you are the reason this podcast continues to flourish and help bring in tips on missing person and cold cases. If you'd like to help keep the show running, please consider supporting our sponsors, signing up to Patreon or PayPal, follow the show on the socials, as the kids say, and share it with your fellow partners in crime. You can find our social links and learn more about our sponsors at True Crime South Africa. /donate. Shout out to this week's Patreon and PayPal superstars. A huge thank you goes out to Maura Priest and Yolandi McCarthy for your support on Patreon. Thank you so much, everyone. Your support really does make a huge difference. Patreon supporters get one additional exclusive episode a month, a shout out on the pod, and other exclusive content, including Q&As with me, as and when it's available. It's a minimum of $1 a month. I think you should do it. Please. And thank you. Kia ba. Episodes in which I discuss family murders are always some of the most listened to cases on this podcast. I guess it's something about recognizing that the greatest danger doesn't come from the outside world. Far too often, it lives inside our homes, with us. In this case, though, the danger was perhaps more noticeable, although I'm sure the victims would never have believed how at risk they were. My sources for this episode include Shawnee Kemp's book Blut Dinner aus Water, and several media articles. So let's get into episode 160, The Langefeldt Family Murders.
The following episode may contain sensitive material, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, or graphic descriptions of injuries to victims. If you feel you may be triggered by such material, please consider this before accessing our content. To access trauma counseling or services, please see the helpline information on our show notes.
Douglas is a small town in the Northern Cape province of South Africa. The town is situated near the confluence of the Orange River and its main tributary, the Vaal River. The town was originally founded in 1848 as a mission station on the farm Backhouse by the Reverend Isaac Hughes. In 1867, the town was formally established and named Douglas after General Sir Percy Douglas, Lieutenant Governor of the Cape Colony at that time. The town is about 100 kilometres southwest of Kimberley and has a relatively diverse population of around 20,000 residents as at the 2011 census. The Langeveld family had lived in Douglas for a long time. They were among the less advantaged of the residents, with the matriarch of the family, 79-year-old Mina, sharing a home with her son, 52-year-old John, her daughter, 39-year-old Hendrika, and her two grandchildren, 17-year-old Hendrita and 19-year-old Ferdinand. The family survived on Mina's pension and grants that Hendrika received, as none of the family members were employed. A multi-generational home like this is, of course, not uncommon, and really among all South Africans, as things get more and more expensive, it's becoming even more common across the board. It's always an arrangement that needs to be approached carefully if it's going to work, and in some families where the dynamic is particularly toxic, it just doesn't work. It becomes especially difficult when one or more of the family members has substance abuse issues, and also if the dwelling is really small and everyone doesn't have their own space. In the case of the Langeveld family, their home only had two bedrooms, and with five residents, they split the rooms down gender lines, so the women slept in one room and the men in the other. Something that would become very clear about the Langeveld family only later on, when it was too late, was that the dynamics within the home were abusive. John, in particular, was said to have been abusive toward his mother, both physically and emotionally. And it seems his emotional abuse stretched toward the other family members too. He was also apparently incredibly controlling of the family's finances, despite not actually contributing to the finances at all. It does seem that the members of the family recognised the toxicity among them, though, as there were protection orders lodged between several of the family members. These, of course, would have taken into account the fact that they lived in the same household, but seemed to have been put in place in an attempt to stop the sometimes violent outbursts that would crop up within the family unit. In hindsight, it's clear that the Langeveld family was a ticking time bomb. Hardly a day went by without an argument, and there were constant biting remarks between the members. In addition to this, John was a heavy drinker, and Hendrika's children, especially her 19-year-old son Ferdinand, seemed to have very little respect for their uncle, probably understandably, considering his behaviour. It seems inevitable, looking back, that this brewing pot of animosity would have come to a head at some point. I have no doubt, though, that none of the family members, perhaps including John, could have imagined how it would all end. On the 5th of March 2014, John had spent most of the day at the local pub, watching soccer on the television and drinking copious amounts of beer. As the sun set, the game ended and John's drinking money ran out, and he headed home. As he entered the kitchen, his mother heated his dinner for him, and he sat down to eat. He hadn't had much of his meal before the disagreements started up again. John's sister, Hendrika, looked out of the window and noticed that John had failed to close the garden gate when he came home. She told him he needed to go out and close it. John spat back that he had closed the gate many times after her children had left it open and continued eating his dinner. Hendrika argued with him, and John swore at her and continued to refuse. He finished his dinner and went off to the bedroom he shared with 19-year-old Ferdinand. The young man was already in bed, and John thought he was asleep, until Ferdinand started muttering to himself. At first, John thought Ferdinand was dreaming, but as he listened closer, he claims he heard the young man was actually swearing at him and insulting him. No one else was in the room to hear this, of course, so we only have John's version to go on. He claimed that Ferdinand began calling him rude names. Mina would later report that John had called out to her from his room, saying, "Mom, did you hear Ferdinand called me a Naya and a murderer?" Now, for those of you who don't understand the reference, Naya is essentially Afrikaans for fucker. The other part of Ferdinand's alleged statement was as confusing to me when I read it as it likely is to you now. A prediction? Or something else? We'll clarify that a bit later. John said that as Ferdinand continued to throw insults his way in the dark, a deep rage suddenly overtook him. He stood up and got dressed. Looming over Ferdinand, John said he saw the handle of an axe sticking out from under his bed. Within seconds, John had pulled the axe out and swung it at an unsuspecting Ferdinand. The single strike was so exactly placed and delivered with such force that the young man was almost decapitated. Although he undoubtedly would have died from that injury relatively quickly, John was not finished. He fetched a knife and stabbed Ferdinand several times. Hearing the ruckus, Mina rushed into the bedroom and began to scream. John claims that he hadn't meant to injure his mother and that the stab wound to her was accidental, but Mina is injured in the fray too. Hendrika runs into the room on the heels of her mother and sees her son's lifeless body being stabbed. She screams and grabs at John, trying to get him to stop. John turns on her, with both the knife and the axe in his hands, and savagely attacks her with both. Despite receiving several serious injuries in short order, Hendrika flees to the lounge in an attempt to get out of the house. Her brother follows her, continuing his attack. Hendrika's 17-year-old daughter comes running into the lounge and screams for help. She sees that attempting to intervene will be useless. She's a quarter of the size and strength of her uncle. Her best bet is to try and get help. So she climbs out of her bedroom window and runs screaming to the neighbor's house. In the meantime, Hendrika has managed to get outside, but she sustained so many severe wounds that she quickly bleeds to death on the ground outside. John throws his weapons to the ground and launches himself over the garden wall. He runs down the street and toward the golf course. He scales a barbed wire fence, slicing his hands and feet open in the process, but the alcohol and the adrenaline in his system ensure that he doesn't even notice, and he keeps running toward the golf course. He encounters an electric fence, but even this doesn't stop him. He digs a hole underneath, but it's not deep enough, and he receives an electric shock on his back as he pushes himself under and onto the green. The Douglas golf course is surrounded by thick bush, and he disappears into the trees and bushes just as a police helicopter flies overhead. Police responded quickly to the Langefeld's neighbours' calls that night. Mina was rushed to the hospital, but there was nothing that could be done for Hendrika and Ferdinand. 17-year-old Hendrita is left alone at the neighbour's house, in shock and coming to terms with the loss of her mother and brother, until other family members can arrive from afar to collect her. The Douglas community newspaper and related social media pages clearly show how horrified the community was at the murders. The very idea of an axe murderer in their community was bad enough. But as the days ticked by and John Langefeld remained on the run, the police came under major pressure to find the man. Residents truly felt at risk every minute of the day, but especially at night. No one went anywhere alone, and as soon as the sun set, doors were locked, and people only ventured outside when absolutely necessary. In the lower income areas, this was incredibly difficult, because many homes didn't have indoor plumbing and toilets were outdoors. Families either made a less pleasant plan with a bucket, or the whole family had to wake up and walk one member to the toilet so that no one went out alone and no one was at home alone. As the days and then weeks crept by, without any sign of John Langefeld, the police seemed stumped. 17-year-old Hendrita was sent to live with family in Pretoria, and when Mina recovered from her injuries and was released, she collected a few things from her home and then went to stay with friends. She would never return to live in that house and eventually rented another small home in the area. Her family did their best to support her, but the older woman's entire life had blown up in one night, and she still didn't know where her son was or whether he planned to come back and finish the job. Mina's friends and family would later say that the woman changed inextricably on the day her son picked up that axe. She developed PTSD-like symptoms and couldn't spend much time around people without needing to retreat to solitude. And the longer John remained on the run, the worse her anxiety became. Finally, on the 13th of April 2014, more than a month after he'd murdered his sister and nephew, John stumbled out of the bushes at the golf course and asked a man and his young son who were golfing for help. The man thought John was drunk and told him to leave them alone. John continued to walk around the golf course until he eventually came across a security guard who recognized him and called the police. John Langefeld had remained on the golf course the entire time he was missing. He would later explain that he tried to take his own life that night by hanging himself from a tree by his shoelaces, but the branches kept snapping. He'd then stabbed himself in the chest twice, but this hadn't done anything, and by the next morning, the alcohol had worn off, and he said he hadn't had the courage to make any further attempts on his life. He had almost killed himself simply by continuing to remain in the bushes, though. By the time he emerged, his wounds were already becoming septic, and his body was going into shock. He'd also had almost nothing to eat or drink during that time and was severely malnourished and dehydrated. He was arrested after being identified, and several posts on social media around this time show that Douglas residents weren't willing to simply accept that it was indeed the axe murderer that had been arrested, and many residents demanded that photographs be published of the arrestee so that they could verify it was indeed John Langefeld. Some residents even went to the hospital where John was being kept to look at him in person and satisfy themselves that they were finally safe. Langefeldt was treated in hospital for a month, and once he was healthy enough, he was taken into custody to await trial. John Langefeldt would plead guilty to 2 counts of murder when he appeared in court for the start of his trial. He gave little explanation for his actions, other than to say that the family's toxic relationship and his alcohol consumption on the night of the murders had caused him to react to his nephew's swearing at him in a way that was inappropriate. John's mother took the stand in aggravation of sentence and told the court that she had disowned John as her son and could never forgive him for what he'd done. John stared at her, expressionless, while she sobbed, and eventually she had to speak from a seat rather than the witness stand, as she could no longer stand up. Now, I will say that I've been unable to find either the judgments or the sentencing documents in this case, and I'm actually going to carry on trying to look for it and do an update if I do find it, or if I get more information after publishing this episode. Because what came next in this case seriously shocked my socks off. Despite the horrendous nature of the murders and the judge's seeming acknowledgements that the victims had trusted John and this made his wild and vicious attack all the worse, John Langefeldt was sentenced to just 15 years for each murder. And because those sentences are to be served concurrently and not consecutively, he would be eligible for parole after just 7.5 years. Those who had loved Hendrika and Ferdinand were understandably outraged. I do realize, of course, that the murders were seemingly not premeditated, and the involvement of alcohol and the extended toxic environment in the home would likely have been taken into account by the judge. But there are other things that I feel should have been taken into account in aggravation. There was a clear history of abusive behaviour by John toward his family members. It's important to remember that domestic violence is not just between intimate partners. In fact, that's why there's a distinction between domestic violence and intimate partner violence. Children can abuse parents. Siblings can abuse siblings. Uncles can abuse nieces and nephews. Many of the behaviors described by John's family definitely fall into emotional and financial abuse. And he physically abused his mother at times too. And in addition to this, there's the matter of Ferdinand's words to his uncle. Some of his last words, as it would turn out. "You're a murderer." Those weren't prophetic. Not some vision of what was about to happen. Ferdinand called his uncle a murderer because he already was one. After his sentencing, one of his family members spoke to journalists to express their horror at the lenient sentence and explain why they felt John was so dangerous. The man told the reporter that this was not the first time John Langefeldt had killed someone. In fact, he'd killed 2 people before, in an incident he was previously convicted and sentenced for. Again, sadly, I have not been able to find any details about these murders, but this fact makes the sentence all the more ridiculous. He was a second-time offender. He had already shown the court that he could not be rehabilitated, because he clearly hadn't been the first time he went to prison. And yet, he was given a sentence that could see him released at just 60 years old. Most definitely still young enough to kill again. And his family fully believe that is exactly what he will do. The family member who revealed John's past to the journalist said that they will be prepared to protect themselves when he gets out of prison, and they will do whatever they need to do to ensure he doesn't get an opportunity to kill another innocent person. Understanding John's criminal past kind of helps me to better understand why his mother put up with so much from him to a certain extent. She likely wanted to help him have a better future. And maybe she was a little afraid of what he might do if she told him to leave. I'd love to more deeply understand the circumstances behind Langefeldt's first conviction, as well as the factors that played into the lenient sentence in his second conviction. But I will say that in addition to this case being a horrific example of how badly wrong family squabbles can go, I think it's also a tragic instance of how the community, the offender, and their family is failed when a perpetrator is sentenced incorrectly or paroled without being ready to be released back into society. John may have pled guilty and acknowledged what he had done, but he expressed no understanding as to how his actions truly were a choice. In fact, he told one visitor before he was sentenced that he was, quote, going back to jail for the right reasons this time, end quote. And when his sentence was handed down, he smiled. He was going back into a system he knew well. He'd gotten out once, and he likely would again. And if you're doing the math in your head, 2014, 7.5 years, he likely already has. Hendrika Langefeldt, Ferdinand Langefeldt, rest gently. If you'd like to hear more victim-focused true crime content, please subscribe to True Crime South Africa on Spotify or the platform you're using to listen right now. If you're looking for something still related to real-life stories, but often with a more positive slant, you can check out my new podcast series, I Lived Through This. You can follow both podcasts on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, thank you for your support, and I'll chat to you soon.